Welcome back to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Barbera. And for this episode of Tips from the Pros, I have somebody that I've been wanting to get on for a while. I've been wanting to, you know, I've thought about the different types of questions I want to ask this guy, because every time I see him online, it seems like he has a different business that he's working on. And he is, I don't even know what he does anymore. I think it's still real estate. I don't know. So we have him on here. We're going to ask him a ton of questions, pick his brain. So I would love to introduce to you guys, Tim Macy. I
like what you're doing here with the podcast, with the show. It's good stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. So trying to get into it a little bit quick, with the real, staying with the real estate side of everything, right? What got you into real estate? Why real estate?
Man, so I got out of the Air Force 2014, 13, somewhere on there. And I was in San Antonio, and I didn't want to go back to my home state of Connecticut, you know, from the Northeast. There's not a ton going on up there. And yeah, I mean, I knew I wanted to write my own check. I didn't want to go back and get a job and work for somebody. And so real estate just kind of ended up being the business that I decided it was the one that I wanted to get into. So, you know, I went to like a lifestyles seminar, right? And I caught a couple things out there. I got on BiggerPockets and I was like, this makes sense. This is what I want to do. And so then I got my license, no idea what I was doing, right? I mean, like we all know, like we don't know what we don't know when we get into real estate. And I don't care whether you get into investing or you get into like the agent side or what, you just don't know what you don't know. And so we just dove in and started learning. And then I don't know how I got to here with like having a bunch of agents, having a team, you know, being a realtor, doing the marketing and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know. It was an interesting journey, but you know, we're pretty happy where we're at.
No, that's it's funny, but it is true. It's like you get into it and you just start stumbling and going through, and then you end up where you are.
Yeah.
So what? But what made you go from? Do you do any investing?
Yeah, we're honestly, my foundation guy just asked me for a check. Like we're flipping one right now. We don't know whether we'll hold it as an Airbnb or whether we'll sell it when we're done. But we're doing that. We have an Airbnb that's vacant. Not too much fun. And we help a lot of investors, with, you know, fourplexes and small multifamily. So, we help investors on the agent side and we do some investing ourselves as well.
And how do you help these investors? Are you, kind of like helping them educate them about the city? I mean, what's their
sure. provide? I mean, you've known me for a little while. I think why investors like working with me and like working with us, is that I don't need to work with investors. And I say that, I don't mean to say that like with arrogance. I just mean that the problem is when you have an agent that needs the money, they'll sell you bad deals, right? And so I have an investor that are just sending me a couple addresses like, hey, what do you think? This wholesaler is trying to sell it for this. And like, I don't need to close this person. So I'm just telling them, I'm like, that's a crap deal. That one may be a good deal. Right. And so I can give them honest advice because of the fact that I'm not like starving to close a deal and need to close somebody.
So I heard as agents, that's frowned upon to give your personal advice to a client.
What agents are you talking to?
I don't know, man. Agents are scared. They're scared to give advice.
Yeah, well, they're scared to give like. In one, maybe I'll get sued someday and lose my license and I'll come back and say, John, you were right. But one, they're scared to like give advice and like talk somebody out of something, or they're scared to like say, hey, you should buy this house. And then the house has issues and then like the buyer comes back on them. And the way I look at it is this, like when we have a client, I'm going to help them out as much as I possibly can authentically. Like I want them to do well. I want their purchase to be a blessing, not a burden. And part of that is me giving them my opinion. And if something were to happen and you know, my client were to buy a house that didn't work out, if they feel like I deceived them or they feel like they're going to come back at me, like that's a risk I'm willing to take. And I'm not worried about it because we deal honestly with everybody that we deal with. Right. You know, I think some agents get very liability prone, which, look, we are in a litigious industry, so I don't knock them for that. But if I had to run my business that way, I wouldn't be doing this business.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I mean, we share a lot of the same ways of thinking. So that's why every time agents tell me that, I'm like, hey, I'm sure I'm going to get sued at some point. But, you know, yeah. I still got to do what I feel is right.
I'm in a lawsuit right now. Things happen.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, you want to share about that?
Nope.
So what made you choose more on the realtor side, though? Because you specialize a lot more on the listings, right?
Sure. So, well, we do about 50-50, man. And honestly, we're probably going to end up being buyer heavy. We'll dive more into this, but it's like listings, I think, are going to get tougher to sell. And, you know, representing buyers, it's like when I represent a buyer, I have to find this buyer a house, and they have all these houses to choose from, right? Like, I can find a buyer a house. Like, we can settle in on something they like. When you list a house, you have to sell this house to, like, you have to get a buyer to pick your house out of all the houses that are available. So, I mean, if you're just doing listings, it can get tiring, especially if this shifts to a buyer's market and you're carrying listings that are tough to sell. It can be tiring. The income can slow down. So we have a healthy mix of both buyers and sellers. Plus, on the listing side, it helps me out. Like, when I go through a listing and I'm looking at it, and my wife and I work with my wife, and we're looking at a listing, it's like, we know that, you know, this master bathroom that has a single vanity is going to be a negative for buyers, because we work with buyers all the time. Like, if you're just a listing agent, I question how good of a listing agent you can be if you're not working with buyers. Like, we're working with buyers all the time, so we know what they're looking for, and we're kind of in tune with what buyers are looking for. So I think you have to be working buyers to be a good listing agent.
That's a really good point. Now, when you say we, what's your team look like? Who are you with?
Sure. So I'm at eXp, and so we have that hierarchy structure where, I mean, I have like 100 agents across the country that have signed up to eXp with me that we work with on a regular basis. 140 right now.
They're with you? They're like under you on that?
Yeah.
Nice.
So we have agents that we collaborate with and we work with, and we're working with on leads and all that other stuff. But like, our core team that handles our day-to-day business is me, my wife, our full-time videographer and content creator, and then our transaction coordinator.
Wow, so you got a hell of a team there. And then you have some good resources nationwide.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, like you were talking about the funny thing of our business, like the hire of your first hire usually is not a content person, a videographer, right? Mm-hmm. But our business is so much based on the content that we put out that's the first one. Like, you should get a buyer's agent, or you should get an admin, or you should get something like that. But I know that our content is what produces our business. So we just decided in December to go all in on content.
And what does that look like? What type of content do you try to generate?
So he is doing a podcast, all our listing videos, and we're doing local restaurants, you know, like a video series on different local spots. We also do explainer videos. So I have like buyer and seller process videos that talk the buyer through different things. Like, if you're having a buyer, I mean, I don't know how many times I've explained to buyers the details of like what an option period is, right? And like how that option period works and what the pros and cons of it are and all that stuff. Like, it's my goal. I'm going to go all over the place, but I think that one of the biggest problems in our industry is that we have clients that feel like they're undereducated, right? Like, if you talk to a person who bought a property, they bought their house, and you say, hey, how was the process? And they say it was bad. I would say most of the time, it's because they didn't feel like they knew what was going on. They're going through this thing. You sent them a 9-page contract. You sent them an IABS. You sent them this stuff. They don't really know what's going on. They don't, you know what I mean? They just don't know. And so it's our goal to have the most educated clients in the market, because I think that's what's important. And so we've gone through And I've just built a library of these videos that are all the conversations that I have anyways. So like what goes with the house, realty items, non-realty items, you know, finding a lender, what you should do when you find a lender, all those conversations, we have a video library. Now, when we get to the option period, I may still have questions about the option period from my buyer, but they're better questions. They have like a baseline good understanding of it. And so those conversations tend to go a little bit better.
And what made you get started with all that, with creating content and putting that out?
So I'm a big fan of like taking action. You keep moving, right? Like I said, I got started in real estate, no idea what I was doing. I went to networking events, right? That's like where we met, going to different networking events, going on Bigger Pockets, figuring out what people knew and didn't know, figuring out where I could help. One of the things I did was like, you know, I went Facebook Live one day when we, you know, one of my clients bought a house at a tax sale. And then there's like nobody, it's the first time anybody's going in the house for who knows how many years. And I go on Facebook Live when that happened and people ate it up. People loved it. And so I was like, man, I should do more of this. Right. And then, you know, I did some other video and people loved it. I did this listing video and people swore I was on a TV show. They're like, oh my God, I saw your listing video, da da da. I'm like, I only have like two listings, but apparently people like listing videos. So we started doing more of those. And I have a video background to start, so I kind of know what I'm doing anyways. But I just saw that people liked it. So I kept, you know, man, I was running around with a camera when I was in high school. Just in like my video class, I kind of used it to like skip class because I was good at it. And so like a video, like one of my videos won an award. And so I used that to skip class in high school. And then I was in going to college for it for like a year. And then I was like, crap, I got to go get a real job. I can't be running around making videos the rest of my life. So I, you know, I mean, I did, I went in the military. I did all sorts of wacky stuff like everybody does. But then landed back on a lot of the video and content marketing stuff that I was doing when I was younger. So yeah, full circle.
Eustacio Tovar says your videos are great.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I enjoy the hell out of your videos, especially now the ones that you started doing with Good News.
I got to do another one of those, man. Yes. Those take some time, you know.
Did he see you?
No. But he's got a ton. He's got a ton of people. John Krasinski there has a ton of people putting stuff in, and he's got like cute kids putting stuff in. I can't compete with the cute kids.
You got a daughter, baby. I see you training her in the real estate space, and you're using it. So you're getting there.
You know, we'll be there soon. We'll be there soon.
That's hilarious. So you pretty much started. You just tried doing the Facebook Live. You got some feedback. It worked, and you just started doubling down. You just kept going deeper and deeper into it, or what?
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, as I studied marketing, I mean, look, we listed properties for investors, right? And because I was selling a house, I was looking at what is the best way to do this, right? Like, what are the best practices when listing a house? And so I started to dive into marketing. I started to see how effective video marketing is in selling a house, right? Like, I can put a house on Zillow and have 1,200 people see it in a week. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I can put a video up on these different social media platforms and get 20,000 people to see something.
Right.
And so you start to see, you know, what forms of marketing are more powerful than others. And video is just a fantastic tool to market the listings that I have and to also generate future business.
Yeah. It's actually funny because Andrew Middlestad says that I met you both on Bigger Pockets. It's not just a cliche.
That's right. That's right.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Andrew's the man.
So what platforms are the ones that you prefer the most?
Okay. So this is a great question. Facebook is, let me classify the platforms, because what are my favorites isn't really useful to the audience. I would say that Facebook is the best place to engage the audience that you have. And on Facebook, you can reach people with shareable content, right? Like, you tag people in things you see on Facebook. You share videos that you see on Facebook. And so it's been great to be able to put a video on Facebook or some pictures of a coming soon listing that we put out like 2 days ago, and it gets like 300 likes and 100 something comments because it's this gorgeous house. And so it's a great place for that, to stay in front of the people you know, right, and also to grow an audience. I do, though, I'm big on YouTube, and we're focusing a lot more on YouTube this year, because on YouTube, you can get higher intent people, right? On Facebook, right, John, your video pops up in my feed because we're friends. Doesn't necessarily mean I was looking for it. I'm not looking for your video, but it's Facebook. I just get a bunch of crap, right? Nice. I love that bald head of yours.
Thank you.
But YouTube, when somebody finds my stuff on YouTube, it's usually somebody that's looking for something that is what I am putting out, right? So if somebody views my real estate investing in San Antonio video, it's probably because they're interested in real estate investing in San Antonio. And so, you know, we always talk about it. It's like 100 views on YouTube is probably worth 1,000 views on Facebook, because the intent of that audience is a lot higher. Now, there's a whole, like, if you're listening to this and you really want to get into YouTube, they're like two totally different languages. And this is the part that I'm kind of fighting with, from the fact I've been putting videos on YouTube the last couple of years, and I've been doing it wrong, trying to clean it up and do it the right way, is interesting.
What's the wrong and right way?
Okay. Well, back to what we were talking about, comparing the platforms. It's like, when I put something on Facebook, I want to optimize it for engagement, right? How am I going to position this post that people will comment on it and share it, right? Like, you see the Facebook engagement bait all the time. People post about something controversial to get people to comment on it. That's why, look, if you're on Facebook and you're annoyed by all the negativity in your feed or all the stupid politics in your feed, it's because people engage with it, and it's likely because you at some level engage with it too, that Facebook's showing you more of it. So that's what you think about when you put a post on Facebook. How do I get engagement? When you post on YouTube, you're saying, how am I optimizing this for people to search for it and find it? Or how am I optimizing it for Google to think it would be a good fit for this person, so it pops up in your suggested videos and all that. So the formulas for what you're trying to do are different. And, you know, I would only focus, if you're not doing anything, I would only focus on one. Because it's tough to learn like two languages at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd focus on building one. And then once you kind of feel like you got comfy with one, and you just want to start doing another one, I would think about doing that. But they're two very different things. And then you got Instagram, right? Instagram's a whole other thing with, you know, being searchable via hashtags. Instagram, you want to be searched, like, people find you via like topics, right? Like, if you go on my search thing on my Instagram, it's like all like boxing and Baby Yoda memes, right?
Okay.
And so if you want to grow on Instagram, you have to like find your niche. And so that way, you know, if you're making Baby Yoda memes, hopefully you're popping up on my thing, because I love those and I'm gonna like them. Does that make sense?
All right. So no real estate on your Instagram.
You know, it's funny. I don't know. Well, if you think about real estate content, I don't really consume that on Instagram. I consume real estate content on Facebook and YouTube and podcasts. That's me personally, right? Yeah, I'm not saying that there's no content to consume. I just don't.
And do you plan that way? The way that you consume is how you look at it? Or are you looking for the data that you're getting? I mean, how do you judge that?
So I am a artist. I'm not like a data person. I'm like a psychology person.
Okay.
Right? I'm thinking about, okay, like, how is somebody going to consume my content? How are the people that I want to consume my content going to consume it. And so, like when I put out the listing video, I went through 7 drafts with our content person on the last listing video because of the fact that I'm like looking at the shots and I'm like 4 shots into it. I'm like, yeah, people are going to lose interest. I'm like, look, the main place we're seeing listing videos do well is on Facebook, right? So we need to optimize this piece of content for Facebook. And when you're on Facebook, you're competing in this fire hose of stuff, right? You're scrolling through, there's cat video, Trump video, you know, politics, somebody arguing, and there's this listing video. Well, I've got like 4 seconds to really get you. Yeah. And so that first shot has to be good. It's got to be fast. It's got to be eye-catching. Then the second shot has to keep you. The third shot has to keep you. And so that's kind of how I think about stuff when I'm making content, is how am I going to stand out in the feed?
Interesting. And what? How do you educate yourself on this? Are you doing anything? I mean, aside from just implementing, or do you? Are there like books and stuff that you would recommend people look into?
I mean, we have our group, right? We have our group, yes. RETV, which is, you know, that thing's kind of
amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of become its own thing, right? Which, yeah, is interesting in and of itself. And so, you know, you can get good feedback from there. But, you know, a big thing for me, at least with what I do, is just learning by doing, right? It's like I put out a video, it didn't do well. Let me go back. Why don't I think it did well? Okay. You know, was it too slow? Was it too fast? Was it not that great of a house? Like, what was it about it? And then we start looking at that stuff. And so when I look at what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, it's kind of a culmination of all the stuff that I've done and just trying to make, keep it getting better all the time.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. So Facebook, YouTube, pick one to get going. Would you say it'd be easier to kind of grow it on Facebook first because you already kind of have friends and stuff like that?
You know, it depends on who you are. Like if I was somewhere where I already had a good sphere and they were on Facebook, sure, I would focus more on Facebook. But if I was moving to a brand new market and I didn't know anybody, I'd probably start on YouTube because especially a market like ours, you start on YouTube and YouTube's going to generate you leads from people that are not from here and moving here. Right. And they don't care if you have friends, right? They don't have any friends either. Right. And so we actually do a lot of relocations. And that's where I would start. If I was in a new market, no sphere, I would use YouTube. If I already had a sphere and I was trying to stay in front of them and grow it, I would use Facebook.
And are you paying for ads on YouTube or anything like that?
So, yeah. So no, we're not paying for ads on YouTube. And the thing with YouTube is the algorithm. And I don't like to go too crazy on the algorithm. Because people get caught up in like the technicality of it. And when you hear about the algorithm, you should understand that Facebook, YouTube, all these Google, whatever, all these algorithms, they're attempting to find the best content for the consumer. That's all they're doing, right? Facebook wants to figure out how to put the stuff in front of you that's going to keep you on Facebook.
Right.
That's where I was, you know, laughing about the fact people complain about all the political posts in their feed. It's like, it's because you're reading them. It's because you're going through the comment section and you can't get enough of it. And that's why Facebook keeps putting it in front of you. So long story short, with the algorithm question that you didn't ask, is that instead of getting too caught up in trying to beat the system, give the system what it wants, which is content that people actually watch and consume. And so when we go back to YouTube and ads, because that was your question, YouTube, a lot of its Google juices on YouTube is based on watch time, audience retention, right? And so if I have a video about the top 5 places to get tacos in San Antonio, right? And I'm running an ad for that and people aren't clicking on it, and then people are clicking on it, but then bouncing out because maybe they were actually searching for something else, it's going to kill my organic sauce on YouTube. And so there are plenty of successful YouTube people that are running ads, but you should only do it if you're really targeted and you know that your content you're running ads for is going to retain the audience, because if it doesn't, it can hurt. Like, I ran ads, like pre-roll ads. I ran one of my videos as a pre-roll ad, and my average watch time was 6 seconds. So what'd that do to my organic juices? It crushed it, right? The pre-roll ads killed my video. And so you got to be careful when you're paying for Google, because you can kill your organic stuff, and your organic stuff is where all the money is.
Interesting. That's a great point. That's a really great point, because you hear all these people, especially even Gary Vee, you know, I'm sure you know who he is.
Yeah.
He always talks about like YouTube pre-rolls and all that. So yeah, I mean, it kind of becomes more of like a clickbait kind of thing that YouTube just pushes it out, but doesn't necessarily mean
sure
that it's hitting the right person.
Man, so I am, I like to differentiate my opinion, because I am a YouTube fan, but I haven't built a big YouTube channel. So take my advice with a grain of salt, in the fact that like I am not a successful practitioner, but I'm just giving you from my 6 months of diving into it and trying to get it going, I'm giving you my tidbit. So yeah, obviously Gary Vee is a lot smarter than I am. But I will say is that all this stuff works if you do it right. But I just, and the reason I push back a little bit on YouTube ads is because it's so easy to do it wrong, right? You're like, oh, I should run pre-roll ads. So you run pre-roll ads and it kills your channel because your average watch time's down. I think some people make a separate channel just to run pre-roll ads from, or they have some super brilliant pre-roll ad designed, right? Like, don't just say, hi, I'm John with Prime Hump. If you've been thinking about something, no, like it's got to be something genius, right, that catches people, hooks people for that 6 second deal. So my only caution is that, of course, if you can do YouTube ads well,
yeah,
it's a good thing. But I've just seen people, and look, I'm myself included, like I've done my YouTube channel wrong for a while, so I'm kind of recovering from that. I've seen people do it wrong and it have a negative impact.
So the reason I'm asking all these questions is I told a lot of people about you, how great, especially right now, right? Like people are really struggling, especially a lot of realtors that I know are really struggling. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, I'm like, well, people need to know who you are, right? And there's just nothing about you anywhere. And it's funny because on RETV, you had posted how somebody had found you because you were the only realtor on YouTube or something.
Yeah. And again, I am like in my infancy stages of feeling like my YouTube is where it should be. And even then, yeah, we've gotten a couple of calls where it's like, oh yeah, I saw you on YouTube. I'm like, no way. I only have, you know, 80 views on that video, and one of them was a phone call. So, yeah, YouTube is a good thing to dive into. It's just different because with Facebook, I can just throw a video up there, right? And who cares? Like if it sucks, it sucks. It's gone, right? The feed has got so much other stuff in it that nobody sees it. But with YouTube, it's like more of a building strategy that you want to have some of your head wrapped around, or else you'll put videos on YouTube that'll get zero views for the next 10 years, and it'll be a complete waste of your time if you're not going at it with a specific strategy.
Interesting. So what do you think as video quality goes? People get, because that's one of the biggest pushback I get, is they get so caught up on, you know, the quality, editing, you know, it needs to look all cinematic. So, like, what are your thoughts? Have you seen a big effect between, like, the really cool videos that you make and maybe the simpler ones, or?
Sure. So, I'll give you, I got my answer for that. So, one, I interviewed Glenn Sanford, who's the founder of EXP Realty, which is a $600 million company. And I did it in my living room. That was an absolute mess, right? Like there's so much room for low quality video that if you have something good to capture it, right? The thing that I will say is that obviously I think we have a pretty good mix. I mean, I'm going live in front of a restaurant talking about the food I just got, and it's delicious. I'm going live at a house because it, you know, there's something about it that I feel like my audience should see. And those are obviously shaky and they're not great and whatever. And then obviously I have these like beautiful professional productions that look amazing. And the key is, I think, to have a wide variety. Like, I'll have the live videos. As soon as somebody sees something is live, you automatically get leniency, right? Like, if you see me holding my camera, I'm live in front of a house, you don't expect it to be beautiful. So it doesn't have to be. And if you're trying to get started, that's a great place to get started because nobody expects super professional video. And then when you start getting into like doing actual listing videos, I for sure think you have to have a bar set for quality because like we spend a lot of money on our, we use Rick Garza Bright and Early. Like he's not the cheapest in town, but he's the best because we have to have a bar of quality when it comes to our listing marketing. And so I'm not going to go do some B grade video for a client because their house needs top level all the time. And so, yeah, when you get into that stuff and you're listing a property, you should definitely be raising the bar and having higher quality video. But all the personal stuff, all the other stuff, who cares? Just make stuff that gets, like you said, lets people get to know you. One of my most successful videos I've had recently was the one of my daughter's birthday party.
Yeah, that was great.
It's nothing to do with real estate, but guess what? Just like what you said, that helps people get to know me. Right. People work with an agent that they know, like, and trust.
Yeah.
They know, like, and trust. That's who they're going to work with. And video helps them to get to know you, like you, and trust you better than any other platform out there. Like, if you're a realtor and you're sending out postcards, and I get your postcard, right? Say I get John's postcard, and it's like, are you thinking about selling your house? And I see your beautiful face on there, and it looks cool, awesome, great. I have no idea who you are. I don't know you. I don't know what you sound like. I don't know what your personality is. But when you see a video of somebody, I'm like, oh, that guy seems all right. You know, it's like there's no better medium to communicate who you are. Now, the problem is some people are just kind of suck and, you know, they don't want to communicate that. So maybe they just stick to postcards. But yeah, I mean, there's just no better way to communicate who you are than video.
Yeah, and do you believe that you should hire somebody for the marketing side if you don't know what you're doing?
So, I mean, one, like, do you think you should hire somebody on the real estate side if you don't know what you're doing?
Great point.
Well, no, I mean, like, you should just learn it, right? Yes. Like, it's part of your job is to learn it. And I think it's part, like, if you're in real estate and you think your value proposition is the fact that you can open doors and know a contract, you're not, you should not be in real estate. Like, it's part of our job in real estate to be marketing experts if we're taking listings. You should not be taking listings if you don't know about marketing. That's what it takes to sell a house. It's like one of the biggest, you know, portions of doing it. So, like, should you outsource some stuff? Yeah, I mean, we have we've got our website with a artificial intelligence bot that chats with buyers and advertises listings and does a bunch of stuff automatically. I'm all for that stuff, but you need to be a marketing expert so you can manage the marketing and you can manage the video person. Trust me, the videographer who does real estate listing videos, I can think of like four from across the country since we know so many that literally can just go in and make a good listing video with no direction. Like if you want, like I'm not telling you need to hold the camera, but you need to be able to direct that videographer on what they should be doing to make a good piece of marketing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's kind of like when people go to flip a house, they know nothing about flipping houses and they're hoping that they're going to hire this magical contractor that's going to come in and know everything that needs to get done. And it's like, if you don't know what needs to be done, you should not be flipping that house.
Exactly. Like, exactly. And look, that's why the money's not in real estate. The money's in selling stuff to realtors, right? Because because you can put out something. It's like for $150, we'll manage your social media. And it's a complete racket. They don't do anything. But I mean, realtors are like, oh, I don't know how to do social media, so I'll pay for that.
Yeah.
It's not good.
And I think it, I mean, I want to get your feedback and see if you agree, but like, I think if you're not willing to put in that work, I mean, don't be surprised that you're not succeeding in this, right?
Look, I mean, I think and I'm going to focus on the listing side, mm-hmm. because I think that is obviously where it's the most important. Like, you can be a hustling buyer's agent who works harder, gets, you know, shows more houses, gets people into houses sooner. Like, there's a lot of value you can add as a buyer's agent without some vast knowledge of marketing. But if you are gonna list houses, like, you have to know, like, you're doing just a disservice to your sellers if you're not a marketing expert.
That's a great point. So, kind of shifting gears a little bit aside from marketing, in the real estate space, how has the coronavirus affected you and your business?
Are we gonna start predicting, pontificating?
No. Unless you want to, I mean.
Well, of course, man. That's why we come on stuff like this and yap, is to give our opinions.
Come on, Nostradamus. What do you see?
So, personally, we had a not directly related to coronavirus, but I think it was affected by it. We had a fourplex fallout. We were actively showing a buyer a house that lost his job. We had a property in an option period where the buyer lost their job. You know, we were on the listing side. Just got a call today, since credit scores changed, one of our buyers is no longer qualified. I mean, yeah, a good amount of stuff has fallen out because of the situation that's going on. So, I know a lot of people in the realtor space, they say, hey, what's going on? They're like, oh, rainbows and butterflies. We're still closing deals. We're still selling stuff. And look, some of us are. Like, one of our agents just got 2 under contract this past week, I think. And you said that you just sold some of your stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it is stopped, but it has significantly slowed down. I think somebody may be able to jump on and throw me some numbers that say differently, but I just have a hard time believing it. Like, it's definitely slowing down.
I mean, I always tell people the biggest economy you need to focus on is yours. I mean, you know, people can be succeeding all around you, but if you're not, I mean, there's something you're not. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's like the people that get super fired up about the presidential election. It's like, whoever gets elected president, you know, love whoever you love, hate whoever you hate, I don't care, because whoever gets elected president is not going to help my business.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Let's get political. Come on.
What's that?
Let's get political.
No, I mean, no, you're not tricking me into getting down that road. it's like, great. I don't mind having political conversations.
Right.
I just, you know, I'm not cheering or crying, which the last election was pretty funny with the crying. I'm not cheering or crying after the end of a presidential election. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But I will say, from your thing, though, is that being in this real estate business, we do need to keep a perspective on what's going on in the economy, because we do need to pivot. And when things happen, the people that pivot sooner win. And if you're, you know, 2 nose down and not really looking around, you could lose by not pivoting early enough.
So what are you doing in your business to pivot?
So I think we're going to head more towards the buyer's market. Hmm. And so we are focused heavily on our buyer processes and our buyer marketing, and really communicating to buyers that, look, if you need to buy right now, we're still open for business, right? Like, we're doing showings, we're doing a lot of virtual showings. Like, I'll go take videos. As soon as I get off of this, I'm going to a listing to take like 10 videos of it, walk it through on my cell phone, send it to the buyer so they can look at it. And then if they like it, we'll come see it in person. So we're doing a lot of things to lower the amount of exposure we have to others, you know, trying to minimize everything. But we're still working, right? It's not like, you can still buy a house right now. And look, I mean, buyer activity is down, so it's a good time for buyers to try to make a deal. And that's a, you know, that's a good thing for that. And then, you know, also saying, look, when this thing opens back up, let's go to work, because there's people that are keeping their listings off the market. They're a little worried. They don't really know what's going on. Like, we saw a lot of withdrawn listings the first week this thing hits. I think once it starts to reopen, we're going to see a lot more inventory hit, and that's going to be another opportunity for buyers. So I think the opportunities for buyers are going to be all around in the next 6 months. And then on the seller side, I mean, we do a lot of marketing for our sellers, right? We do a ton, but we're getting much more vocal about it, because I think it's going to be the marketing that we do, I think is going to be a lot more important over the next 6 months. So we're tuning heavy on buyers, and then we're getting more vocal about the marketing and things that we offer sellers.
And do you want to share which way you're getting more vocal with them?
How I'm doing it?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, just the, you know, different videos. We're actually, I hate drip emails and whatnot,
yeah,
but we are going to start blasting out some emails saying, hey, look, this is what we're doing. You know, we're just big on showing people, right? Like, if I get somebody that wants to sell their house, I can send them, this is the marketing that we're doing for a listing right now, so you can get an idea of what we do. Not me promising like these things that I'm going to do for you. No, this is what we do. And so we're just getting better at telling more people that via text, email, social media, all the above.
Nice, nice. And what have you seen any changes in the buyers that are coming in as far as like their pre-approvals? Like, are you seeing any?
Yeah.
What changes have you seen?
Let's talk about it. Because I know there's a lot of speculation on what's going to happen in the market. Mm-hmm. And one, I'm going to preface this right now. Nobody knows, right? Like, we are in unprecedented, uncharted territory, and everybody's making predictions, but they are predictions. Some are more educated than others, but at the end of the day, anybody that tells you that, like, oh, it's going to come right back, like, they don't know. And anybody that tells you the economy is going to crash, they don't know either. We're predicting. Without further ado, I'm going to predict. Look, I think the things that are interesting to me in the market right now on the buyer side are that lending requirements are going up, right? And I think we're going to see an uptick in foreclosures, and we're going to see an uptick in short sales. And I don't think those lender requirements are going to come back down quickly. So higher credit scores, just stricter underwriting on buyers. And I know I've seen buyers buy our listings that were tight, right? We had sold listings to buyers that I don't think are going to be capable of buying a house the rest of the year. And so you're going to see part of that buyer market get constrained by lending requirements. Okay. And then you also have another piece of the pie, which is people who don't get their jobs back. I mean, look, a lot of these companies have laid people off or furloughed them, right? We all know, well, it's only because this temporary thing, but these businesses have lost a lot of money. I don't think they're going to hire everybody back on in the next 3 months. I think there's still going to be people that are out of a job. There's also local businesses that are just got completely wiped out. They're never going to come back in business, and that's going to be huge. So unemployment is not just going to, like, don't get me wrong, it shot up. It's going to come down dramatically as things open up, but it's not going to shoot down. It's going to be much higher than it was 2 months ago. And so that is going to shorten your buyer pool. And then you have people that were thinking about buying a house. And look, people have not made the best decisions all the time when it comes to buying a house. The economy's good. Their job's good. Everything's good. You know what? I'm buying the $600,000 house. Well, guess what? Those people that may have bought a $600,000 house now have a little bit brighter of a light shined on their financial situation because all this stuff's going on. I think there's going to be less people that are jumping into the market as buyers. So I think there's a lot of things that are going to have an impact in shrink the buyer market for real estate in the coming, I'm going to say, 18 months, 2 years. Okay.
Wow.
Now, I would say that you also have this. You have landlords who aren't getting rent, right? I have an Airbnb that's sitting vacant, and it's it's killing us. We're lucky enough where we haven't touched, like we just have an Airbnb and the money that it makes just sits in that account. We don't consider it like spending money, right? So it's just sitting there. So we're lucky. I mean, we're fine with it vacant. But most people aren't. A lot of people use that money to pay the mortgage, you know? And so I think you're going to have Airbnb owners, you're going to have rental owners, you're going to have people that need to sell. You're going to have foreclosures are going to go up, short sales are going to go up. And so I think you're going to see an influx of inventory. And if you have an influx of inventory and you have a shrinking buyer market, I mean, you tell me, what's that mean?
Yeah. Supply is going to go up, prices.
Right. Yep. So I look at all that and I have a tough time believing that we won't see a swing to a buyer's market. And I, you know, who knows? I could be wrong. The only thing that I do like, not the only thing, the thing that I really like about San Antonio is that, you know, we're networked across the country. And I think there's a lot of other markets that are going to get very negatively impacted by this.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that's going to move here. Right. So I do think we're a little bit sheltered from a lot of this because we're going to have such an influx. Like I've got buddies in New York City. Like it's crazy. Like people bought condos for 10 million 2 years ago. We're going to sell them for a million.
Yeah.
Right. Cause people just, they're like, man, this doesn't make any sense. I need out of here. And I think we're going to get some of that benefit. Texas in general, some of these other, you know, cheaper markets, but Texas is like the best one. I think we're going to win in some of that. And that may offset us locally. But I would be surprised if we didn't see a negative 2 year impact on real estate as a result of all this.
Wow. 2 years. So you don't think that interest rates being as low or even dropping lower is going to help kind of make that affordability of help buyers?
Sure. Let me ask you, for the person who is working at, you know, Sears and just got Sears out of business. I'm trying to think of a good example here. I'm an analogy guy. I mean, for the person that is out of a job, middle-class person, mm-hmm. they just lost their job. They're living in their house. And, you know, one of the spouses, now we got a Tiger King situation. Their spouse has a job. Then one of them lost their job. They're trying to get their job. Do you think they really care that interest rates are low?
Right.
Right. Like I love the interest. That's such a real estate person thing to say. Right. And I'm not knocking you, but like as real estate people, like, oh, the interest rates are low. They're like, man, I just lost my job. Like, I don't care if the interest rates are low. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we try to sell people on that, but people don't care.
Right. They're just trying to survive. Just trying to get by.
Yeah. I mean, look, when I talk to people, like most buyers, and we're like, hey, you got locked in at a 3.8. They're like, oh, okay. Like they don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like interest rates can be as low as they want. It's not going to change people wanting to go buy or sell a house.
No, that's a very good point. Very good point. So buyers are going to be struggling. Sellers are going to be, you know, I think investors are going to, especially all the ones that have been getting into this because it was so easy. You would just, you know, the market was pulling you out.
Yeah.
For the ones that are still in this, like, what do you see as far as San Antonio goes, right? What do you see should be more of a focus, more of a safe bet, I guess, moving forward as far as investing and doing stuff?
I say this as somebody that loves downtown. I mean, like we like Beacon Hill, right? We have our office is at Logan's Place in Government Hill. We love downtown. Like if a good thing popped up downtown, Pond sending me houses all the time downtown that she wants to go buy. So I love it. Most of our buyers want to live in Alamo Ranch. They want a new house, right? That doesn't have any problems. They want to live in suburbia. And the speculative downtown urban revitalization thing, rolling the dice, hoping somebody's gonna, you know, pay more for that's a tough game to play. And I feel like you've watched it. You've seen these people that kind of like keep barely making it, right? Like somehow they get out of this deal to get to the next one, and they dig themselves out of the hole to get to the next one. And I mean, you could drive around Dignity right now, and I mean, you've got about 50 houses, right? We just looked at this before we jumped on. There's about 50 active listings on the market. And if you drive around, there are renovations getting done that are going to be on the market soon, right? There's a bunch of houses getting renovated in there. There are zero houses right now under contract.
Jesus.
So that means in the last 1 to 3 weeks that nobody has written an offer on a home in Dignity Hills. Right. So I think that's where, and the other thing is too, I mean, can you imagine people living in a condo right now?
With this quarantine, you can't go in.
Right.
Yeah.
So look, I think a lot of people are going to want to sell their condos. Like, you know, I'm big on the urban revitalization thing, but I think this will have some negative impact. And people are like, man, downtown living's cool, but maybe I do want to go live out in the middle of nowhere.
You know? Yeah. No, that's a really good point. Yeah. Damn, it sucks because I get a lot of calls from investors and they're in the middle of these massive projects and they're like,
yeah,
what do I do? Like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we just don't know. You know that you got to still get through it. You got to try to finish it. And hopefully, I think the financing plays a big part. Like, hopefully, you didn't get any crazy financing that you can't negotiate your way out of. It's a tough situation.
So I would say, to people that are doing stuff in these markets, it's like, go hard. Like, you need to make your house better, sexier, cooler. Do not be, skimping out and like not putting the glass in the shower because you're trying to save your last buck. Saving $200 is going to lose $2,000 right now. You got to make your house perfect. You got to make it sexy. You got to make it good. And then you got to price it right so you can sell and get the heck out of there before you wait and see what happens over the next 6 months.
No, that's a really good point. So quality moving forward as a listing agent, like what is a recommendation that you give people?
Look, man, here's the thing. I mean, I talk to people that want to flip or people that are looking at buying flips and they send me comps, right? And they're like, well, based on the comps, you can sell it for $200 a square foot. So I can sell it for this amount of money. Yeah, but the only way you can sell your property for the $300,000 you want to sell it for is if a buyer goes to all the houses that are in range of, 270 to 320, and they decide your house is the best one. That's what people lose sight of. Like, you have to create a home that a buyer, after looking at all of the other homes available, wants to buy. And too many times, they think like, I'll renovate the bathroom, I'll put the kitchen in, and we'll put it on the market. And it doesn't work because you're never the number one. Like, if we're showing downtown buyers, we go look at 20 of these houses. We go look at 20 of them, John, because there's so many. There's so much inventory in the market. And then we're only writing an offer on the best one. And if your house is not the best house on the market this weekend, you're not getting an offer.
No, that's a really good point and something that's very, we've seen it. It's very true.
Well, you guys won. You did a great job on your house and sold it for more than I thought you were going to sell it for.
Yeah. And it's really been based on that. And I mean, that's something that we see with Barr a lot. And, he's also an agent. So
yeah,
we're looking at all these things all the time. So he even comments right now, I agree 100% that now is the worst time to try and save money, cutting the quality of the renovation and being cheap with the list. So
I've seen it so many times, man. People try to save a couple hundred bucks and lose thousands.
Yeah. And even one of the biggest things, and I'm sure that this is a pet peeve of yours because you mentioned, the photo taking company.
Pictures.
Yeah, but the company, Bright and early.
Bright and early, yeah.
We use them all the time, especially really any house that's like worth, you know, over 200 pretty much, like any really nice house, we always go to them. Because and we tell people, it's like the quality matters. Like, people shop online first.
The number one thing.
Exactly. So, and I saw that you started doing virtual tours now, right?
Well, so yeah, so that happened. We have, we've got these cardboard VR headsets, and they're pretty cheap. And you just put your phone in them, right? You put your phone in, you pop the thing up, and you can like look around those Matterport tours in VR. And so, because of the fact that, like, you know, showings are down, all this other stuff's down, I wasn't big on the Matterport tours. And what we're talking about are the like fully immersive, you can look around the house in 360 degrees type stuff. And I wasn't a huge fan of those because I'd rather have like super sexy pictures, the super sexy video, and then have people go see it. I was always worried that like if people saw the whole house on one of those, they may not see it. We may get less showings. But now it's like, I need to have people seeing the layout, seeing all the details, seeing exactly what the house is like. Because people aren't going to go look at 20 houses this weekend, right? They're only going to look at houses they're really interested in. So I think now it's super important to make sure all of our active listings, have those 360 walkthrough tours. And the first weekend this thing hit, we didn't have any and our listings were down quiet. And then that week we were working on getting them for all of our listings. And the next weekend showings and feedback and everything shot way up.
And do you need those, that little cardboard?
No, you don't. You can click around and do stuff, but they do have a VR app where you can actually put your phone in the headset and it's pretty cool.
Well, you have a video, right? On where was it? On RETV or on your Facebook page too?
It's on our Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely go check it out. And I have your handle down here at Tim Macy Realtor.
Yeah.
And but I went to look at that video and I was like, it's really cool. I mean,
so from a marketing perspective, it's like, you know, we'll give these to buyers and there's, you know, I don't know what percentage of houses have the VR walkthroughs on it, but all of ours do, right? And so, you know, maybe we'll show sellers that, you know, you can do this thing and it's really cool. But the biggest thing that we're trying to do right now is stand out, right? Is stand out as agents that are doing more during this. Yeah. And so like, you know, I don't know how many people are going to use this, but I know people that watch that video are going to say, geez, that guy is going for it. They're trying to figure out solutions while everybody else is complaining about stuff. And so, you know what I mean? It's just a full circle kind of marketing play.
Yeah. I mean, a funny example, but to your point, I went to see a house and meet with a seller. And I wear my shirts everywhere I go because it's branding.
Yeah.
And I go in and I'm talking to the husband and the wife is just sitting there. And as I loop around the whole house and we come and we talk, she's like, okay, I believe what you're saying. She's like, because I just checked you out on Facebook and it seems like you're, I was like, oh shit. Like, I never thought of it like that, but she was doing research right then and there and saw us on Facebook, saw the research that we were doing and everything. And she liked us, right? She could relate. So, I mean, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I do have, again, Mr. John Barr. He's asking, how much does one of the VR walkthrough cost?
Usually I think, probably $200, somewhere around there. Depends on how big the house is, you know, cause it's like a giant house costs 4,000 square foot house costs a lot more cause they have to map out a larger space. But I think average probably $200.
Wow, that's not bad at all. And you buy those cardboard headsets and you send them to your buyers? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, those are, I mean, we ordered like branded ones. They haven't come in yet, but we ordered like, I think they were like $350 each. But if you get them single, you could probably get them for like $5 a piece.
$5 a piece.
That's bad. I mean, it's not expensive.
No, and to give them that level of experience, and you're talking about, you know, the like you're saying, you're putting yourself out there, you're showing them that you care, right? By putting in that kind of work, I mean, it's just one step above. That's why, you know, honestly, why I wanted to have you on here, to show people like the level of dedication and work that you put into your business. Like every time I see you, and this is honestly like, you know, not to give you a big head, but, you know, but every time I see you, you always are doing something new. And even when you started doing like the restaurant tours and all that, like grading, I was like, it's fucking genius. I was like, you know, because you're showing people San Antonio and you're showing them everything.
Look, if you don't do a million things, you'll never figure out what works.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like you listen to a podcast and you hear about some guy that like figured out some mail campaign and he's got some system and it works, right? And like, he didn't likely, I mean, if he's a guru, he'll probably tell you he did, but he likely tried a ton of crap before he landed on that thing that works. And so we're all different too, right? Like what I do isn't going to work for everybody, but you just got to keep trying to do different crap until you figure out what works.
Yeah, and that's the biggest key, right? Like if I try to do what you do, it wouldn't work because I don't have the charisma that you have to do the videos that you do, right? Like,
yeah,
and it would be disingenuous. Like people would look at me and they're like, "What the hell are you doing?" Because it doesn't fit with who I am, right? So you got to stay true to who you are. So I mean, and I think that you do that very, very well. So two final questions to let you go. I know that you got a listing to go to. What is a personal and a business book that you highly recommend?
I can't read.
You can't read? Dyslexic?
No, man, you gotta morph your question here. Because you know, I watch movies. And
All right, so what's a movie?
So we just saw Parasite. Parasite was good. And if you're into video or you want to get into video, I would watch it because it's subtitles, right? And so any movie that can keep your attention and, you know, be a good movie that you enjoy and isn't even in the language that you speak is a good movie. And like, so why was that a good movie and all that stuff is a fun conversation. So go watch Parasite. I think it's on most of those streaming platforms now. And then honestly, on the professional side, I think everybody should watch The Big Short. Because there's a lot of things going on right now that that movie gives you somewhat of the understanding for. So like when we talk about the mortgage industry and how like just smashed the mortgage industry is getting with this, I don't know. It's hard to tell, right, when you're in this stuff because your lender tells you something and you're like, you know, the lender's going to always tell me it's not as bad as it is. And so you're trying to figure out, okay, how bad is this mortgage thing really? But the whole mortgage industry is kind of jacked where you have a loan originator who's our local person who provides this great service, right? They qualify the person, they help the person, and they get the loan originated and they get it done. And then what happens? The loan gets sold to an investor and there's a servicer, right? So we're doing a short sale and Wells Fargo's the servicer, but a different investor owns the loan. And then the investor, I guess, like they get enough of them and they package them up into mortgage-backed securities. So you have mortgage-backed securities that then get sold to like pensions and hedge funds. Complete racket, right? Like that, like if you were like, how should I do mortgages? Nobody would make that system.
I love that movie. I mean, when I watched it, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Holy crap. How is this even legal?
What you what's going on right now though, I mean, which I'm sure you're probably up on, is like you know, the people have missed their mortgage payment and it's crushing loan servicers. Investors are tightening up and they don't want to buy loans right now because people are saying they're not gonna pay their mortgage. Right? And if you hold notes, like would you buy a note if you knew that the person wasn't gonna pay their mortgage? Right? So like that whole chain, that whole daisy chain of the mortgage industry has a ton of pressure on it right now. And there's debt, like I was saying, there's going to be real impacts to this. And watching that movie though, gives you like a really cool, quick crash course of, you know, kind of the mortgage industry and mortgage-backed securities and all that.
Great recommendation. And the last question, speaking to a lot of people that are very scared, stressed out. You know, they're worried about everything that's going on. What's one advice that you would share with them to kind of help them be more optimistic or maybe more positive or change their state of mind moving forward?
Just get more educated.
Educated.
I mean, when you met me, I didn't know nearly as much as I know now. And like, I may sound pessimistic, but I don't think I am. I'm just trying to be realistic, right? I'm trying to look at the facts. And I'm not really worried because I feel like I'm educated, right? I feel like I know a lot. I feel like when I look at the sea of other people in this industry that I know more than the average Joe, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if, you know, I remember walking into a listing appointment and this other agent that I knew was like a really good agent in town was walking out, and I went in and the person loved me, right? They loved me. I'm pretty likable dude. They loved me. And I was like hoping that out of the charity of their hearts, they would give me this listing. Right. But nobody does business with that. They do business with you because you're the best and you need to know you're the best. And you only know you're the best if you're educated and you know everything. And so just get more educated and, you know, I think that's how you stay positive.
Yeah, you're not accidentally going to win.
Yeah, no.
That's good. Well, Tim, I really appreciate you, man, and I appreciate your time. Why don't you tell people where you are, your YouTube channel, how to get a hold of you, like to so people can even at least just learn from you. Where can
sure.
they go?
So, I mean, Tim Macy, if you put me in the Facebook or the Google, you should find everything you need to. If you don't, then I'm not doing my job correctly. But I would say, you know, the RETV thing too, it's RE space TV. It's just about doing video for real estate.
Yep.
It is real estate agents and lenders. So if you're not an agent or a lender, when you hit your little request thing, put, you know, Tim Macy invited me from John's podcast or something, we'll get you in. But I would check that out because that's like a really good resource to get better at video if that's something you want to do. It's RE space TV.
And the podcast that you said that you were doing?
The RETV podcast.
Oh, RETV podcast.
Yeah.
And that's everywhere,
yeah.
iTunes, all over the place.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, sir, again, thank you very much. Good luck with your business and everything that you're doing. And I hope to get you back because I still have a ton of more questions for you.
Let's do it, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Have a great night, man.
Thanks, brother. Later.